It's time for the Miller's Edge with four-time SEC champion and two-time national champion Christian Miller.
Once again with Christian Miller taking him down.
Here's college football playoff national champion Christian Miller on Tide 100.9 and 1230 AM WTBC.
And welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Miller's Edge, Top 100.9, 1230 WTBC, presented by the Good Feet Store, America's art support experts. Hope everybody's doing well. Hope you guys are ready for a fun one here on the show. I feel like this has been a good week, man. We've had a lot of action going on, a lot of guests, a lot of talking points, and we've been having fun. And the fun will continue, and it's going to get kicked off really early here on the show today. Up first, we'll have at 11:15, so in about 8 minutes or so, we will be joined by Nakai Hill-Green, Alabama linebacker. He'll be joining us via the phone lines. We'll talk with him about the season, you know, his journey, how he got here, you know, their thought process going into the playoffs, where they will be slated to take on Oklahoma in a rematch game. So we'll do all of that. Ask and you shall receive. I know you guys asked the other day for some player interviews, specifically some linebackers, and we made it happen, man. So that's what we do on the Miller's Edge, man. We make magic happen. So that magic will be happening in about 8 minutes or so. So make sure you guys are tuned in for that. Make sure you guys are ready for that. If you guys have any questions, maybe we'll have some time to sneak one or two in. I mean, I obviously have a number of things I want to discuss with him. And I know that he's probably on a, you know, time crunch given their schedule and whatnot. So hopefully we can get everything in. If not, no worries. But if you guys want to maybe get a question in there, you can always drop that. Where can you do that? Well, you can download that Top 100.9 app. Hurry up and do it. That way you can drop an app message. Right? You basically leave that on there. I'll pull it up. I got it. So it's set up now. It comes to my email directly. And so I can just keep refreshing that. So I'll make sure we're up to date on that. Plus, that app allows you to listen to the shows wherever you're at in the country, really in the whole world, right? I've had people out of the country listening to it. So make sure you guys download that Tide 100.9 app. Plus, check us out on the stream at The Miller's Edge on YouTube. We stream every day that we do the show. If you guys prefer to watch me do the show, watch us pull up tape, videos, all that good stuff. Sometimes we get guests on here as well. You can do that right there on the stream. And it's free as well at The Miller's Edge. Only thing we ask is you drop a like and subscribe if you guys enjoy the content. We're going to keep rolling with more guests, too, at 12 at the top of the hour here. We will be joined by my partner in crime over on the Crimson Tide Sports Network, Gray Robertson, also of SEC Network, as we do pretty much every Wednesday now, right? And we're going to talk these playoffs, this playoff whole scenario picture. We talked a little bit with Chris Lowe yesterday. We'll talk with Gray today, get his thoughts on everything, how it played out, and what he thinks about Alabama's bid, where we got slotted and so forth. So we'll do that at the top of the hour. And then we'll look to go to you guys, 205-342-9904. You guys are always encouraged and invited to jump on the phone lines if there's anything you ever want to talk about, or if you got a question, or you just need to, like Clint said, Clint Lamb of Cover Crimson yesterday, a little bit of a therapy session sometimes he gets to come on here. He's got his own platform. Check them out, Cover Crimson. But sometimes it's nice to be able to vent a little bit on another platform. Definitely understand that. Let me remind you, I got you guys about our friends over at the Good Feet Store, America's art sport experts. Try before you buy. Nothing to lose. Make sure you guys check them out if you're dealing with any type of pain, whether it's foot pain, knee pain, back pain, you name it. The Good Feet Store will take care of it with their premium art sport designed to eliminate and alleviate all types of pain. If you're like me, you're on your feet a lot, walking dogs, walking around, whatever the case may be, working out, whatever, right? Check out the Good Feet Store. These are premium arch supports, not your typical orthotics, but premium orthotics designed to eliminate and alleviate all types of pain, clinically proven to do so in just 4 short weeks. So make sure you guys check them out. Again, that is the Good Feet Store, Midtown Village in Tuscaloosa, or you can always go to their website, goodfeet.com, schedule an appointment, find the nearest location to you. They are nationwide. Again, that is the Good Feet Store. Improving the quality of people's lives 2 feet at a time. We got about 2 minutes before we hit this first break. A couple things. Reed Chase, you guys behind the glass, man. And we'll probably go back into this a little bit later because, again, we'll be joined by Nakai Hill-Green, Alabama linebacker, in just about 5 minutes. But did you guys see any parts of this Ed Odron interview with the Bustin' with the Boys guys?
I have not. I think I overheard a buddy of mine playing it next to me. And you could tell when it's Ed because he's got that certain voice, but now I haven't seen him.
Yeah, okay. Well, we got about a minute and a half, but here's a little clip of it. And let me make sure. I might need to cut it off at the end. You guys have the dump button just in case they drop a word or so. This kind of sums up the interview, and this is kind of crazy. This was him talking about his thoughts on NIL. So I'm just going to play this, and we'll go to break.
Let's go back in time a little bit. We've had a lot of SEC guys on here. They've never admitted it, but we all know that SEC was NIL before NIL.
Hey, you know.
Hey, I love that laugh.
We're way past it. Can we now just admit it?
It's all good. Hey, you know what? I say, hey, coach, you know, you've been out of coaching for a while. And how are you going to adjust that NIL? I said, well, it's a minor adjustment. And they said, what do you mean? I said, back then, we used to walk through the back door to cash. Now we just got to walk through the front door to cash.
I'm going to leave it at that because I can't remember if it was this clip or another clip. Some profanity pops up. But I'm sorry, but that dude just seems, he seems like a good time. And it's amazing that, I mean, eats, sleeps, breathes everything, you know, Louisiana, right? I mean, like, he's like the epitome of Cajun Louisiana. And then the fact that he won a championship at LSU is gold to me. I think it's hilarious. And just seeing him in this element. You guys, if you haven't seen, I haven't even watched the full interview. I've just seen a bunch of these clips. And I'm like, God, this guy he's either just has, God bless him, with a lot of natural energy. He's using some type of supplement, legal or illegal, or I don't know what his deal is, but he is hilarious. And he's, yeah, man, good football coach, too. I don't know if he plans on coaching. I mean, he's got the leather jacket on. He's kicking it with the boys now. I don't know what his plans are, but I'll tell you this, man. He could probably create some interesting content if he really wanted to do so. So that being said, let's hit a quick timeout. We'll circle back with some of that stuff later. But when we come back, we'll be joined by Alabama linebacker Nakai Hill-Green. Talk some Alabama football, talk the season, talk the playoffs. Talk some defense right here on the Miller's Edge, Time 100.9, 1230, WTBC.
This is Miller's Edge on Tide 100.9.
Wednesday edition of Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, presented by the Good Feet Store, America's Arch Sport Experts. We're now joined by Alabama linebacker Nakai Hill-Green. Nakai, man, what's up, man? How's everything going?
Great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, I can't complain, man. Did y'all finish up with practice? What's y'all schedule looking like right now? I know, obviously, you play next week, but are you guys off a little bit? Do you have practice today? What's it looking like up there at the complex?
Yeah, we had a couple days off, but we got after it today.
Good deal, man. Good deal. Well, I appreciate you joining us, man. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with me, but I played here. I played linebacker. I finished up in 18, played with the Panthers a little bit. Now I covered the team and cover college football, but I work with the network. But, man, I'm glad to have you on here. I love getting guys on here to talk football. And I'll be honest, man, I'm a fan of your game. I watch a lot of tape. I do a lot of breakdowns. And you stand out to me. You play with a lot of physicality. I'll be honest. I kept seeing 41 flash. And I heard a lot about you coming in here. Yeah. I heard a lot about you coming in here when you transferred in. And I'm like, I mean, we've got a veteran come in and helping out this linebacker room, which is really good. That's something we needed. But I wasn't familiar with your game, bro. You remind me of a classic kind of old school kind of like guy that we would have probably played with, you know, like downhill thumper. Where's that physicality come from, man? Have you always been that type of player? I mean, is that something you've developed over your career? Where does that like tenacity and that intensity come from?
Really just where I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, a gritty blue collar kind of place. And I would say just where I come from, you got to be tough. So that's where I would say it came from.
No, I respect that, man. I respect that. Like I said, we watch a lot of tape on here. We, you know, we're a radio show, but we stream and we watch tape on here, and you can ask our listeners, man, they wanted us to get a linebacker on here. And I was like, man, the guy would be a good one for sure. Cause like I said, we turn on the tape, man. 41 keeps popping up, making plays. And even when it doesn't count on the stat sheet, I can tell our listeners, man, when a guy's sitting there closing like that and he's, you know, taking on tight ends and he's setting edges and he's, you know, not afraid to contact, he's setting up a lot of other players too, man. So I definitely respect that about you. But tell me a little bit, you know, you mentioned your upbringing. Tell me about your journey, how you got here. I mean, you're a seasoned vet, as we would say, especially at the college ranks. I want to say Alabama was your third stop, if I'm not mistaken. How did that all work out for you, Nakai?
Yeah, so in high school, I was highly recruited out of high school, choosing between I went to a really big high school, St. Francis Academy in Baltimore, Maryland. It was a boarding school. We fell short of the national championship my senior year, second team in the nation. Choosing between Michigan and LSU coming in to college, I ended up choosing Michigan. Played there for 3 years, had a lot of great memories and time there. And then my high school coach from St. Francis Academy, he ended up getting the head coaching job at Charlotte, at University of Charlotte. So I went there for a year with him. And after that, I went to Colorado with Coach Prime last season. And that was pretty good, a good experience. And then after that season, I was all conference and stuff like that. But I felt like there was more for me to do in college. And what I kept hearing from scouts is your competition. You got to play against, you know, more NFL prospects. And what better place to show it at than Alabama, the standard of college football. So that's pretty much my journey here. And it's been great. And I'm so glad that I came to Alabama. I learned so much over these past couple months, and just the coaches and the players, they've welcomed me with open arms.
Man, that's awesome, man. I can't help but ask you. I mean, Deion, he's your former coach at Colorado. I mean, he's a polarizing figure. We see him all over the media with, you know, his son Bucky posting the clips. But I want to ask you, I'm just curious, how was it playing for him, and how does that compare to being here? I mean, I'd imagine probably a little similar, because I feel like he's an old school type guy. There's probably some type of standard over there at Colorado with him. How was it playing for Coach Prime?
Honestly, it was really good. I learned a lot from him, just small things. Like, I could see how he was a Hall of Fame player. He, like, mm-hmm. still gets treatment. He's in the facility first in the morning. Just small things. And I don't even know if he noticed that I picked up on it. Like, he always stayed in the weight room, like, when we had our workouts. Just small things I picked up on him that helped me implement that into my process. But yeah, Coach Prime, he's a really good dude. And, I really liked my time there.
Yeah, no, that's cool, man. I couldn't help but ask. I mean, I've seen him from a distance. My dad played against him for a number of years. My dad played in the league for 9 years, and, you know, taught him up a lot, you know, as a player, but watched him as a coach, man. He's definitely very entertaining. But you leave there, you come here, and I want to ask you about your time here so far. You mentioned you've enjoyed it. You've learned a lot. Talk to me a little bit about the season so far, Nakai. I mean, you guys have definitely had a strong season, especially as a defense, right? You guys have really come along, especially the growth and consistent play that we've seen from you guys since that week one game. We know that wasn't y'all's best showing, but then since then, it seems like every single week, you guys have just gotten better and better. One, tell me, how would you assess y'all's performance as a defense throughout the course of this year? And then two, what led to that consistent growth and improvement in play throughout the course of the year?
Yeah, first I would just start off and just say, like, this group, I'm so proud of this group for what we've done. But I got to say, we got another gear. I know we do. Just knowing these guys in this locker room, I know that we have another gear. And throughout the season, we focus on being process-oriented and just getting better. And there's no secret. There's no magic pill. We go in every day, and we literally focus on getting better. And like we say as a defense, there's no my bad. There's no my bad. Because we know we have another year, and we know that what elite defenses do, we're capable of doing that. So we really want to put that product out there and really just focus on improving.
Yeah, no, I mean, it sounds like kind of the philosophy we've always had, man. No poor me's, no my bads, man. Just go do your job. And I've heard you guys kind of talk about that. We always just said dominate your box with Coach Saban. But would y'all say it's very similar? It's kind of do your 1-11. Is that right? Is that your Kane Womack's kind of deal with you guys?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You just you make your play. The guy next to you is going to make his play. And it's all going to mesh together well.
Tell me a little bit about this, Nakai. Again, we're joined by Alabama linebacker Nakai Hill-Green. Man, big thanks to him spending some time with us here on the Miller's Edge. Nakai, tell me a little bit about this. One thing that I've noticed that you guys do sometimes, and I'm genuinely asking from, like, a football standpoint, is y'all have some y'all's backers mugged up on, like, first and second down looks. And it's something that I've never really seen too much of outside of passing downs. kind of what's the coaching point there when y'all do those looks like on defense? You know what I mean? Like y'all are mugging in the A gaps on first and second down, more of a rundown situation. Kind of talk to me a little bit about that. I don't think that's what you call vol package. Vol package is when you have the wolf, I think, kind of hovering around. But like the mug looks.
I don't want to give away too much of the sauce, but like I'll simply put it like this. We can show up, we can blitz, we can show up, we can drop out into mm-hmm. coverage, we can show up, we can spy the quarterback, we can show up, we can drop out, the D-line can run a game. I think it's just more like not being off ball and letting the quarterback see a clean alignment. So we're mugged up and it kind of looks muddy to the quarterback. So I'll just say that. I'll put it in a simple way and just say it like that.
No, that makes perfect sense. And that proves what I always was thinking correct. Because in my head, because people would ask, because sometimes I'm just going to be honest with you. I would tell Kane this. Sometimes I was like, man, I feel like it might put our guys in some conflict, you know, versus being able to, you know, play downhill. Just like you, man, when you get to play downhill, you play fast, you play physical, you go attack. In my head, I was like, sometimes I feel like it's a little bit of a conflict having to step back first, then go attack a guard or, you know, play off of that look. But then I said, you know, to be fair, the point of it probably is to try to throw the blocking schemes off, try to mess with the quarterback. They don't know who's coming. Same thing that you're trying to do on third down, you're just doing on first and second down, hopefully trying to cause some disruptions like that. Yeah, so that makes perfect sense. I'm glad you could answer that for us, because I know a lot of people ask me about you know, those looks and those things. So it's good to get a confirmation from you. Tell me this, Nakai. You guys, we know you guys made it to the SEC championship, not, you know, the performance you'd like to have, and you know, it is what it is, but you guys do get selected to go play in the college football playoffs, where you'll be tasked with taking on an Oklahoma team that you saw not too long ago. What's y'all's mindset in the mentality that you guys are taking into the playoffs right now, knowing, you know, hey, our last game won our best game. I'm sure you probably, you know, got some fire in you because of that, but also you get to go take on a team that you know, suffered a loss against in the regular season. Kind of where is y'all's head at as a football team right now?
Yeah, where we're at is being process oriented, getting better. We're not dwelling on our shortcomings at all, because we understand that this is a new season. This is surviving in advanced style of the season, and really, it's a blessing and a curse type of phrase that I'm going to say. But nothing that we did before matters, and we understand that nothing that our opponents did before matters. So it's a new season, and we just plan to go 1-0 and keep on getting better. And when the dust settles, we want to be the last standing.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was always the mentality that we adopted. You know, it's like you said, it's a new season, right? And, you know, back when it was a 4-team playoff, you know, same thing, but a little bit different. It was like, man, you got like one chance for sure. You guys, same thing. It's, you know, one and done. But you're right, man, 1 week at a time. And, you know, from here on out, man, you got to win every week. And that's all that matters. So I love that you guys are taking that on. Real quick, I got another question or two from you. Might get one from our chat since we got like 2 minutes or so, but I want to ask you, playing in Coach Womack's system, man, you know, one of the biggest differences that I've noticed from what I played in with Coach Saban and with him, his is definitely a lot more, hey, go out there, be an athlete, let it rip, man. We're going to let you guys be football players and fly around, make plays, and really try to force turnovers, which you have done. I mean, I watch you constantly punch the football, peanut drill, man, you do a hell of a job doing that. What's your favorite thing of playing in this Kane Womack swarm defense?
Really blitzing. Blitz is like you said before, like we can show up, and it's not always like I'm creeping into a blitz. I'm already at the line of scrimmage, and the offensive lineman, he doesn't know that I'm already on him in a blitz. He thinks that I'm dropping out, or he doesn't know what I'm doing. So I would say the blitzing element of the defense, he's always trying to get us backers into one-on-ones on the worst alignment. And really just the versatility that we get to show. He moves us around a lot. He puts us in positions to make game-changing plays. We don't play tentative. We play really aggressive defense. I would say blitzing is my favorite part.
Absolutely, man. Now, I always, when I chop it up with him when I'm up there, man, I'm always like, man, it would have probably been fun to be an outside backer, especially in this system too, with the, like you just mentioned, the flexibility, moving around, being aggressive, coming after. Yeah, man, because Coach Saban used to have us, like, so I would have played the wolf because I was a Jack/Sam. And we used to, man, hand in the dirt, six technique, you know, tight fives. And I'm like, man, I'm 235, 240 pounds. I want to be in a nine. I just want to let it rip off the edge. I see that's what game one.
I played the mint defense.
Did we play what?
Did you play the mint defense?
Oh, yeah. We played a lot of mint, too, especially over, like, the second half. Because I got here in 2014. When I first got here, it was like we were one of the first waves of, like, the lighter outside backers before everybody. Like, I played with Denzel Duvall, right? You know Denzel, I'm sure. And Jamie Mosey was my roommate. And so me and Jamie, then Rashawn Evans, if you remember him, you know, we were the first class of, like, we all were, like, 230 and under. And so, you know, initially they had us doing a lot of more, you know, a lot more similar things that they're doing with Denzel and those guys. I mean, a lot of, like, you know, this true base defense where we're in tight five, six techniques, but then once we started playing more spread offenses and, you know, dual threat quarterbacks, the reason they recruited us, we started playing a lot more men. And so when we would have our jack out there, yeah, we'd have that flexibility. But now men's kind of taking over college football, I feel like. Men defenses, you know, those tight, you know, tight fronts, right, with those four eyes, being able to stop the run while having guys off the football. Do y'all play a lot of men too?
We've gotten away from it. But I do see a lot of college football teams playing that. I'm pretty sure a lot of SEC plays it. Like, Ole Miss plays a lot of men.
Georgia.
I can't think of the ones, but I know for sure Ole Miss because that was the first one that I thought of. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Georgia plays a lot of men. So, hey, anybody that comes from, like, you know, peak, you know, Golden, he comes from Coach Saban, and I was here with Pete too, and. You know, obviously Kirby as well. I mean, you'll see a lot of men. I was about to say, y'all maybe ran a little bit of it, but I didn't think you ran too much of it. But yeah, we definitely played a lot of that, a lot of cover seven, which was Coach Saban's special. But that's why it's fun to watch you guys, because it's a little bit different than what I'm used to. And it's definitely grown on me because it was different at first. It was adjustment, but seeing how you guys play, man, fast, free, physical, and, you know, attacking the football, the pass rush is starting to come on too. And then, like you mentioned, with some of those blitzes and more simulateds that y'all have been running, it's definitely been good. Nakai, I don't want to hold too much of your time, man. I got one final question for you, man, and we'll let you run out of here. For you, man, you come to Alabama, it's your final year, man. We got the Oklahoma matchup coming up, and hopefully, like you said, you know, 1 week at a time and last team standing is the goal. But for you, after coming here, I mean, you right now, I think you've got, like, what, 45 tackles or so, some forced fumbles. You're playing some really good football, right? I mean, you might not always get the recognition that I think you deserve, but that's why we got you on here. We're trying to, you know, show you some love, and I know people see it the more they turn on the tape. But for you, man, what would, like, make a successful, you know, final year for you, man? Like, what's the ultimate goal as the season goes into the postseason? Things are starting to wind down for you individually and also as a team.
I'm gonna put these two together because I'm the ultimate team guy, and winning is the biggest thing to me. I think that. I truly believe that we have another year. Coach DeBoer, he always says, you guys have more in you. Like, you have more in you than you think. And I truly believe. I said the defense has another year. I think offense, special teams, I think our entire, even coaching staff, I think we all have another year that we're going to tap into. And I think we're charged up, and we're ready to get after it. And my ultimate goal is to win this whole thing.
Yeah, that's the goal. I love it, man. I'm definitely going to be rooting for you. I guess I lied, man. We got one more question that just came in our chat, and I think it's a pretty good one for you to end on, too, because obviously you talk about you getting ready to finish up here. Some younger guys, somebody in the chat wants to know. Dom in the chat, he's curious. He said, who would you say are some younger guys that will be up next? Probably specifically the linebacker, or I'd say on the defensive level. So anybody on the defense, some young guys that you think the fans should be looking out for.
Definitely, London on the D line, he's coming on. Justin Hill, these are guys that I see being captains here, being really good players here. Ivan Taylor, Dijon Lee, all the young linebackers, all three of them are constantly in me and D-Law and Justin Jefferson's ear about learning, about getting better. They're all four core special teams guys. If I could really pick one that's just going to blow everyone out of the water, I really got to go with Justin Hill. because it, wow. I see his process, and I honestly, I don't even view him as a freshman at this point, really, if I'm being honest.
Wow. You know, it's interesting you mentioned him, man. I'm a big fan of his, man. He obviously we play the same position, and I got to chop it up with him a couple of times when I was up there. And I agree with you, man. Definitely mature and wise beyond his years. And I've loved how he's come along, man. He has some big plays in the SEC championship game, had to step up due to some injuries throughout the course of the year, and he definitely responded to the challenge. I definitely agree, man. All those people you named, man, especially you mentioned the linebacker core. People are going to be happy to hear that, because unfortunately, y'all three, man, top three guys right now, man. Y'all are, you know, out of here, you know, seniors, and got to move on to the next level in the pros. And so we're going to have a whole new wave of linebackers. So it's good to hear that you guys are confident in their ability and their process. Mekhi, man, I appreciate you hanging out with me, man, and taking some time out of your day to join us here on the Miller's Edge, man. Best of luck to you and the rest of the team and the rest of the playoffs. Hopefully you guys have a safe, healthy rest of the season and a very successful one. Like you said, last team standing, man. Big thanks for you joining us on the show today, brother.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely. That was Alabama linebacker Nakai Hill-Green. Big thanks to him coming hanging out with us here on the Miller's Edge. Take some time out of his day. Like he said, he had a couple days off, but they're back to work today. So big thanks to him joining us after that. We got to hit a timeout when we come back. We'll keep on rolling. Don't forget, at 12, top of the hour, we'll be joined by Gray Robertson of the Crimson Tide Sports Network, SEC Network, talk some more playoffs. But when we come back, real quick, we're going to respond. If you guys have any questions, anything you want to bring up, we'll talk about it right here on the Miller's Edge. Tide 100.9, 1230. WTBC.
Hey, this
is Miller's Edge on Tide 100.9.
Welcome back into this Wednesday edition of the Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, presented by the Good Feet Store, America's Art Sport Experts. Big thanks to Alabama linebacker Nakai Hill-Green, who just joined us via the phone lines. If you guys missed it, just go on the stream and rewind about 25 minutes or so. If you're watching it on the replay, you can always do that. Or wherever you get your platform stuff, these episodes and all that always get saved, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all that. So make sure you guys check that out if you did it, man. Really, really impressive young man. I mean, you can see why he's a leader on this football team, a guy that I think is a little, you know, under the radar. I feel like people don't recognize the great things that he's doing. But when you turn on the tape, man, he calls your attention for sure. I mean, the physicality, you know, the speed that he plays with, the recognition. Really good football player. So really glad we could get him on here, give him some flowers and chop it up, talk some football, man. And I liked his message. I think a lot of you guys in the chat did too. Saying basically, you know, they're on a mission. They have another gear, right? And it's a new season, 1-0 mentality, but they really believe that they've got a lot more that they can get out of each other, whether it's defensively, offensively, special teams. So that's exciting. That's exciting. So I think a lot of people feel good after hearing that, which is good. Again, we got Gray Robertson joining us at the top of the hour. We're talking some playoffs there in a minute, but we got a couple minutes. 205-342-9904 is the number to the phone lines. If you guys want to jump on now in between now and Gray, you can. We got plenty of time. Or you guys can wait if you'd like. Reed, Chase, anything stand out to you from the interview with Nakai Hill-Green?
I think the main thing is, like you pointed out, the whole, like, next gear. Because that's one thing I've noticed. Like, you know, I feel like our defense has just been so great this year. I was kind of curious, like, what does that next gear kind of entail of? Is that more pressures and more sacks? Or is that, you know, like, the whole defense tackling one guy, you know, like, surrounding him, you know what I mean? Or is that more turnovers? That's kind of – it almost makes me question, like, hey, if we haven't hit our quote-unquote ceiling, what does the ceiling look like?
Great question. I mean, let's talk about it. I would say defensively, what is that next gear like? I mean, listen, defense has been playing some really good football. I don't know statistically where everything lands right now. I was trying to pull it up while we were talking to him just to throw out some numbers. But I do know, I think, like, total defense, we're at, like, 3 now. I think post-SEC championship game, we're at 3. I know we got up to, like, 1 or 2 briefly, like, after the SEC championship game. That might have skewed some of the numbers. But, listen, our defense is playing some damn good football. If I had to say what my next level or next gear would be for the defense, I would say maybe a little bit more pass rush. I would say, just because I know, you, if you look back, like, Yonze started coming on, but I would say more of a, even more consistency there. Like, I know we've improved there, but that's really probably one of the highlights of like the things that we need to get better at. If you look at a lot of the numbers, which I'm not saying only the numbers, the tape will tell you this too, but the numbers just on the surface level will show you, we haven't been getting to the quarterback as much as we would like. You know, turnovers, we're like top in the ranks with that. A lot of other categories, but I would say get after the quarterback. That might be an extra gear. I mean, even more consistent stopping the run. I mean, if you go back and watch the Georgia game, I think they had like 140-something rushing yards. And I think part of it was, you know, once we started getting a little bit worn down a little bit. But I would say a little more consistency there. I mean, really, an extra gear could be anything. You could be playing, you know, damn near your best ball. There's always an extra gear. But when I think about this defense right now, I would say even more pass rush, even more consistency stopping the run, and then getting back to really being those ball hogs. We haven't forced as many turnovers in the last few games as we would probably like, right? Going back to Oklahoma, we didn't force any. We'll skip over Eastern Illinois against Auburn. The late one, and then was there another one? Was there an interception or something? I can't even remember. But maybe those things. Offensively, we could probably name a number of things. Starting with up front, you know what I mean? Being dominant, getting push. We're trying to run the football. The backs turning up a gear with their vision, hitting holes. Ty Simpson turning up a gear. I think right now, if you look at Ty, he's so patient. He's hesitant on a lot of stuff he's doing. He needs that confidence back, man. He's got to find a way to get that confidence back. I think that's kind of what's really been plaguing him as of late. You're not seeing that same high level of anticipation and confidence when he's you know, throwing the football right now. And I think that's kind of leading to some things. And I think I think a lot of it has to do with him and his process. But I also think, too, if you really – you got to give credit where credit's due. If you look at the defense that these teams are playing, going back to whether it was LSU, whether it's, you know, Oklahoma. I heard a guy talk, a matter of fact, and he was saying – Alabama, when they face elite defenses, they do not perform well. And it's kind of crazy because if you really think about it, he's not really wrong. And I'll say, when you watch Oklahoma the way they played us, just like what Georgia did, we're seeing a lot more of teams. They're bringing a lot more pressure. Not only that, they're disguising more on the back end. Basically, I think what happened was earlier on in the year, people didn't completely have us figured out like that just yet. I know people have been saying this, but it is kind of true. Just think about it. Like, for example, when we played Vanderbilt, I remember, this sounds bad, but I remember thinking in my head, I'm like, I feel like these defenses are just like we were playing good football, but if I'm being completely honest with you, and I swear to God, I was thinking this. I was like, these defenses are almost like just allowing us to continue to do things. It's one thing, like, you make a player or two, cool, but like, there's no reason why week after week after week we're just continuously hitting these hole shots when these teams just continue to play these base cover twos and they're not making any type of adjustments. And people have to understand there's different types of adjustments. There's adjustments where you're talking about full schematic adjustments, and there's adjustments where you're talking about, hey, we're just, instead of this guy being 10 by 2, we're going to maybe play him 12 by 2, knowing these guys like to hit, you know, the windows behind here. Or we're going to play this guy a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage. Or we're going to play this, you get what I'm saying? And people were just we were just picking people apart, playing cover two and these zone defenses. We were killing zone defenses. And I think what you've seen is the evolution of throughout the season is that now a lot of these defenses going to Oklahoma, LSU, whatever, they're running a lot more simulated type pressures. They're showing Ty one thing. They're getting to a different coverage on the back end. I had to do, and I'm sick and tired of, no, I'm not sick and tired of doing it, but it's just funny. And I know these people think I'm sassy on Twitter. But it's, I'm just tired of people posting these things like, oh, Tim Keenan dropped in coverage for the second time in a week. What are your thoughts? Why is he doing that? And they're fueling all these people just to go, oh, that's so dumb. Why is a 300-pounder dropping? And I'm like, you set yourself up to just prove you don't know football, man. We had a former Bama guy literally doing the same technique last night in the NFL in Deshaun Hand from a three technique, just not a nose, popping out in that hole window. And guess what? He picked off another former Alabama player. I'm like, dude, it's called simulated pressures, man. You mix and match, like you mix things up, right? Like, no one just every single time is just sending basic four-man rush. And you just, it's an exotic type pressure. That is the point of it, is to give the quarterback a different look to confuse him. That said, I think defenses are throwing a lot more at Ty, and they're doing more to take away the deep game, right? For example, Georgia played a lot of three high safety look. I could be wrong, but I don't remember them doing that a whole bunch the first time we played them. I could be wrong. I'll go back and look. But guess who also did a lot of three high safety looks against us and had success? Oklahoma. This is a copycat league, right? LSU brought a lot of pressure. If you go watch, that's what I told you guys. What did I say? And you know what's crazy? I even said that. I said Georgia's probably going to go watch a lot of Oklahoma tape. And then here they are in three high safety looks. What is that saying? That literally means we don't respect the running game enough because we're letting it's first, second down, and we're taking away all these deep parts of the field. But we'll give you a light box and we'll give you the flats because we're just going to play deep to short. That was their game plan. That's what they executed. And that's exactly why they had such a dominant performance on defense. It's that simple. And I literally said these things. That's what's going to happen. That's what good football coaches do. So we got to find a way offensively, man, to get back to the, just playing how we played earlier. And it's not just on one person. I think it's on a number of things. But I think it starts with balance. I think it starts with being able to run the football. I think it starts with getting Ty back comfortable. I think it starts with doing things, whether it's extension of the running game or just putting the ball in our playmakers' hands. I mean, you see what Ryan Williams can do after the catch. I mean, I know he's struggling catching the football, but hell, more screens, more end arounds, more all that stuff. I mean, it's a group effort. Let's do this. Let's hit a timeout. We got Ricky on the phone lines. I want to get to him before we go to the top of the hour, and we have Gray on here. So we'll do that. When we come back, we'll keep on rolling, keep talking plenty of football. Number of things. We'll talk some playoffs here in a little bit and more right here on the Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC.
We're home base in Birmingham, Alabama.
We are here
treating patients from every generation
across the United States
and from around the world.
We're here for the rookies
and the dreamers
trying to make a name for themselves.
We are here for the achievers
who are resilient
and won't take no for an answer.
We're here for the coaches,
athletic trainers, and mentors
who are shaping the next generation of legends.
We are here for you,
aggressively pursuing
victory over injury.
Learn more at andrewsportsmedicine.com.
Miller, and I want to tell you about our great friends over at Brian Harding Construction. Located in the heart of Tuscaloosa, Brian Harding Construction is woman-owned and strong as steel. A specialty manufacturing firm with expertise in structural steel fabrication, ASME code piping and vessels, CNC machine work, welding, laser cutting, pipe fitting, industrial maintenance, and crane rental. With a proven track record of over 30 plus years of experience, no one is better fit for the job. For an evaluation, contact Brian Harding Construction today at 205-752-9611. Again, that's Brian Harding Construction at 205-752-9611.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A pleasant afternoon, mostly sunny with a high of 57. A bit colder tonight, mostly fair with a low at 32. For tomorrow, lots of sunshine, the high 49. And Friday, we turn warmer, the sky partially sunny, the high 61. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 55 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is Miller's Edge on Tide 100.9.
Hey, welcome back into this Wednesday edition of Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, presented by the Good Feet Store, America's Arch Support Experts. All right, let's go to the phone lines, 205-342-9904. We got Ricky up first. Ricky, welcome in.
What's going on, man?
Man, can't complain, man. I'm chilling. How's everything?
It's good, bro. It's good. Just I'm down today. I don't have to shoot anything, so I had to figure I can call.
Hey, we'll take it, brother. Always good to hear from you, man. What's on your mind?
All right, so do you remember when Colin Kaepernick, like, went on that tear in San Francisco and he was just, like, balling out? Well, at the time, my uncle who played at FAMU, he used to keep telling us, he's like, listen, the reason why Colin Kaepernick looks like a god to you guys now is because nobody got footage on the man. But watch next year, watch the decline and watch how everybody adjusts, and it's not going to be the same story. So, like, what's going on, like, with our offense kind of, like, reminds me of, like, that whole ordeal. It's just, like, nobody knew what you were getting from, like, Alabama after the Florida State loss. I didn't know. I don't think anybody knew. So, like, asking you, like, as a defensive guy, I feel like you guys, after the Oklahoma game, it's just like, well, I think we all know how to, like, plan against, like, Ty Simpson. And that's just to draw pressure, like, against him. So, like, Ryan Grubb, I know everybody likes to, like, point fingers and, like, they want, like, someone to blame. And everybody on Twitter is an expert. What do you think, I mean, what do you think, like, with Ryan Grubb, is it, what does he have, like, against, like, screens and slants? Or is it just, like, Ty is not seeing it? Because I saw you break down footage of, like, a couple of plays from that SEC title game. And, like, I saw Ty miss throws. Like, I saw, like, check downs that, like, had 15 yards, like, after catch, like, that he could have had easily. Is it a Ty Simpson thing or is it a Ryan Grubb thing? Like, I'm not big on, like, pointing fingers or anything. I'm just trying to figure out, like, why no adjustments, at least from his standpoint?
Listen, I think it's a number of things, and I stand by everything I've been saying. I think that's why, going back, I sat on the show and I said, you've got to find ways to run the football. Even though I know we're winning games, I know everybody was like, oh, we're winning, we don't need to complain. I'm like, nobody's complaining. I just know how football works. You can't be one-dimensional. Because what happens is when you're one-dimensional, you'll see Georgia can do what Georgia was doing, right? And they can just, like, that's what I meant by they're going to prepare themselves to defend the pass, which is what you do well. And then once that goes away, you don't have anything. Like, that's what I've been saying all year, and that's what you're seeing. So that's one part of the problem. So that's a combination. So then you want to have to, I guess you have to ask yourself, well, why can't we run the football? I mean, it's, you know, it's tough. We broke down, you know, the running game. It's a number of things. You know, sometimes it's guys not, you know, finishing blocks up front. Sometimes it's not climbing to the level consistently or fast enough. And other times it's the running backs not hitting the hole right or effectively, or the timing's off. So then you got that battle. But in terms of what you're describing, I think with Ty, I think it's a number of things. When you don't have a running, like, let me be clear, because I think there's some people that are putting too much blame on him, even though, listen, he is responsible and accountable for a number of the issues. There's no denying that. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's saying that. I understand his shortcomings. We'll get to that. However, if you don't take into consideration that we have a lack of running game, or we're not able to effectively, you know, attack the deep part of the field, things like that, you know, if you don't take that into consideration, then you're kind of doing what the same people are doing with Milroe the whole time. Like, oh, it's all – no, it was always a number of things. So that said, I think Ty right now is kind of in his head. I think his timing is a little slow. I don't think he's seeing things nearly as well as he was before. Like before, like, think about all the, I mean, he was attacking the middle parts of the field. I mean, in, you know, covered areas, but because his timing was good, because he was accurate, because he was confident delivering those throws, you know, we had a lot of success. Now, I find the problem is I think he's trying to get back to that. In other words, he's trying to do too much, and he's trying to be that guy instead of just taking these check downs and little things and just, you know what I'm saying? Like, taking what the defense gives you. Because right now, the defense is trying to take away those things. But I also think the coordinator needs to help him out, too. Right? I think we need to do more things to try to, you know, get some rhythm throws, some screen game, work the perimeter, stuff like that. I think that would help him out tremendously as well. But again, he also needs to play better football and make better decisions, speed up his clock, and do a lot of other things well.
Well, let me ask you this, like, since you brought that up. Like, the forcing throws, do you think it's, like, it's him, do you think it's him, like, knowing, like, I got all this offensive firepower around me, and these guys usually make these kind of throws in practice? That's why you see it a lot in games versus, like, let me just take this quick check down, get a couple yards down the field, instead of trying to hit, like, the home run play. Like, do you think it's because he knows what he has?
I mean, I'm sure he's confident in his players for sure, but I think the other part to it is, Ricky, I think a lot of these play designs, you know, they anticipate hitting those, you know, those players or hitting those options. And then they were able to do it early on in the year. That's what I'm saying. I think he's trying to lean so much into that because they did it at one point. So obviously they know they can do it. But my thing is, you know, we're at a different time right now. You know, things are a little bit different. Defense are playing a little bit different, right? Like you see how Georgia was playing.
Right.
They were locking a lot of that stuff up. So you just have to transition. Look, if you're just going to have to do a bunch of checkdowns, so be it. That's what the defense is giving you. You can live to play another down versus three and outs, you know, forcing things and leading to an interception. You know what I mean? Like, and I think, listen, maybe he's a little banged up too. I'm sure there's a number of things that fall in this whole deal. But I think at the end of the day, I think it's a group effort, right, where we don't have a running game. Right. I think some of the play calling's not really helping him. And I think he's in his head and he's not playing the same quality football he played early on because his timing's off, the confidence not there. Hell, even his footwork sometimes is, that's what I'm saying. The lot has kind of changed with his play the last few weeks versus the middle of the season. And they've got to find a way in the next, I don't know, 9 days or so to get as much of it cleaned up as possible before you go on the road and play another, you know, tough game against Oklahoma.
Well, I hear the music. I just want to say this last thing. Xavien Brown got left off the All-SEC team. I think he is the one of the best safeties in our conference, probably top five in the nation. They left that man out. I'm still rooting for him. Roll Tide.
Absolutely. Roll Tide, Ricky. Good deal. We got to hit the top hour break. Big shout out to Ricky joining us on the phone lines. We come back, we'll be joined by Gray Robertson, SEC Network, Crimson Tide Sports Network, my partner, on the post game show right here on the Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. From the Fox Sports studios in Los Angeles, here's Steve DeSager.
Shohei Ohtani of the Dodgers was voted AP's Male Athlete of the Year for a record-tying fourth time. That's four of the last 5 years. The Phillies re-signed Kyle Schwarber to a five-year contract, and Schwarber will be on Team USA in March at the World Baseball Classic. Philadelphia gave manager Rob Thomson a one-year extension for 2027. The Dodgers are signing closer Edwin Diaz from the Mets to a three-year deal. The Tigers re-signed reliever Kyle Finnegan, and the White Sox won MLB's draft lottery, so they'll select first next summer. The Indianapolis Colts signed quarterback Phillip Rivers, who hasn't played in 5 years, but Indy has three injured quarterbacks. In the NBA Cup quarterfinals, Orlando advanced over Miami 117-108, 37 points for Desmond Bane. New York won at Toronto, 35 points from Jalen Brunson in a 117-101 victory. And college hoops wins for UConn and BYU.
Do you have cracks or potholes that are dragging down your property's appeal? Hey, I'm Christian Miller, and at Asphalt Restoration, we transform driveways and parking lots with expert repairs, new paving, or resurfacing. Fast, durable, and family-owned quality that you can trust. Don't let small issues turn into big expenses. Call 205-393-9149 for your free estimate today. That's 205-393-9149. Asphalt Restoration, where smooth roads start. Roll Tide.
From our home base in Birmingham, Alabama, we are here
treating patients from every generation
across the United States
and from around the world.
We're here for the rookies
and the dreamers
trying to make a name for themselves.
We are here for the achievers
who are resilient
and won't take no for an answer.
We're here for the coaches,
athletic trainers, and mentors
who are shaping the next generation of legends.
We are here for you,
aggressively pursuing
victory over injury.
Learn more at andrewsportsmedicine.com.
What does it mean to advertise and do your marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa? Melissa started her business in 2014. What would you say to someone considering Town Square Media Tuscaloosa?
My experience with Town Square Media has been awesome, and I would definitely recommend it to anyone. I think that this is the first time in my marketing experience that I've been able to see my return on investment. I would definitely say in the past, that has not been the case. In this, I like knowing that that's 100%. A lot of the marketing we've done has been radio. You guys have so much more to offer than that, whether it's, you know, websites from targeted marketing to radio. You are kind of a one-stop shop, and it makes doing marketing so much easier. So I would definitely recommend it.
For more info on marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa, call 205-345-7200 or click on Advertise with Us on our website.
And not down again.
That was Christian Miller.
It's time for the Miller's Edge with four-time SEC champion and two-time national champion Christian Miller.
Once again with Christian Miller taking him down.
Here's college football playoff national champion
Christian Miller
on Tide 100.9
and 1230 AM WTBC.
And welcome back into this Wednesday edition of Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, presented by the Good Feet Store, America's Arch Support Experts. Hour number two officially underway. Hour number one, we were joined by Alabama linebacker Nakai Hill Green. Big thanks to him. As he mentioned, they're back to work now and had a good day of practice, and he was able to join us afterwards for a little bit. Shout out to him. But now we go back to the phone lines where we're joined by my partner in crime on the Crimson Tide Sports Network, Gray Robertson. Gray, all right, now, you know, we do this about every week now. We're talking playoffs, we're talking college football, everything about it, and we got some good news this time around. We didn't win the SEC championship game, but we did earn a playoff spot where we will travel on the road to Norman and face an Oklahoma team that we're pretty familiar with at this point. Gray, number one, welcome in. And two, man, talk to me, man. How'd you feel about the whole playoff seating?
Hey, Christian, good to be with you. Always a pleasure to spend multiple days a week talking football with you, apart from our Saturday show. But, yeah, you know, I felt as things were going down on Sunday, I was surprised, but not necessarily shocked at how it went down. I think that we could really get into the nitty-gritty probably and spend an hour going over kind of the flaws in the process and, you know, the understanding of how the committee came to this decision. I think at the end of the day, they probably got it all right. I think they got all the at-larges right. I think they got a good portion of how this is supposed to go right. I was surprised Alabama stayed the 9, and maybe that's, you know, something worth nitpicking in the future. But yeah, I mean, what an opportunity for Alabama against a team. You know, we did that postgame show a few weeks ago against a team that I think Alabama is better than. They just lost the game. And it'll be a really good opportunity to get some redemption after playing probably efficiency-wise one of your better games on offense the back half of the year, but losing because of turnovers and other really big mistakes that you can't make once you get to the college football playoff.
No doubt about it. Let me ask you this, though. I know we've texted a little bit about it, but for our listeners, Alabama loses 28-7 to Georgia in the SEC championship game. Like you mentioned, you know, we sit on the Crimson Tide Sports Network post-game show every week on Saturdays following the conclusion of the game. And we have been talking about in recent weeks, hey, man, Alabama is looking good for a playoff spot. But the only thing they probably can't do is go lose convincingly against Georgia in the SEC championship. Besides that, they should be clear for a playoff spot. Well, sure enough, ironically, that's what happens. We go and play Georgia in Atlanta, and we lose pretty badly, 28-7, and we know how the game went. Was there ever a doubt in your mind that Alabama would make the playoffs? Because, you know, I'm sure you heard, you know, Damian Harris, former running back, Mark Ingram, a lot of other guys in the media didn't have confidence. In fact, they felt that Alabama probably didn't deserve that playoff spot. Was there ever a doubt in your mind that Alabama was going to make the playoffs, Graham?
I guess a little bit of doubt. I said it on our show Saturday. I should have been able to analyze the bracket and go, and I am certain Alabama's in. But I couldn't say that because they got blown out by Georgia. I just would have been so surprised if they had kicked out the SEC runner-up, the one seed in the SEC championship, from in the bracket to out of the bracket after that performance, even though it wasn't pretty, just because of the ramifications of what that would have done for conference championships, what that would have said about this entire process moving forward. Kicking them all the way out would have set a really, really bad precedent that I think the fallout would have been many, many years. And maybe the fallout of this will be many, many years as well. But I was pretty confident because I felt like Alabama, at the end of the day, the resume was going to be good enough to get in over one of Notre Dame or Miami, or apparently both. You know, I said it on the show, I thought Alabama would be the 10 seed and Notre Dame would be the 9. why I thought that is maybe another thing worth nitpicking. I think the weekly shows did more of a disservice than anything else this year because we try and utilize those as clues for how things might go. If anything, they let us all down the wrong path pretty much every week. But no, I felt like Alabama had done enough to earn it. The resume was significantly better than Notre Dame and Miami. The only nitpick was the third loss, but how much that should impact the team when it's an extra game as opposed to something that happened in the regular season is up to the committee's interpretation. And this year they said it shouldn't really impact Alabama. So I really didn't have a problem with it. I know Alabama guy doesn't have an issue with Alabama in the playoff, breaking news, but it made sense to me when they all laid it out.
Tell me this, though. Do you have any problem with a team like Notre Dame? And I know a lot of Alabama fans could care less, but I'm genuinely curious because when I look at Notre Dame and how they've been playing as of late, I mean, to me, they look like probably one of the top 12 teams in the country, right? And I don't think that should have come at the expense of Alabama. But I feel like there should be some way or another we get a team like that or even the likes of a team like maybe a Vanderbilt, who I think would be much more competitive than Tulane or JMU. And shout out Tulane, my neighbor, you know, played football. He played offensive line at Tulane. So I don't not trying to diss them. But in my opinion, though, I just feel like the 12 best teams would probably consist of a team with the likes of Notre Dame or even Vanderbilt over the two that I just mentioned prior. Do you feel like we're kind of doing it a disservice at this point, allowing teams like Tulane and JMU to be in the playoffs at the expense of a team like Notre Dame or Vanderbilt or even Texas?
Yes and no. I think it's important that, you know, we give credence to some of these schools outside of the Power Four to give them the opportunity to play on the big stage, because that was what everybody was begging for years, right? Utah goes undefeated. Boise State goes undefeated back in the late 2000s. And everybody's like, well, shoot, why don't they have a chance to play for a national championship? I think that it's important to give those schools that opportunity. Now, should there be two G6 teams in here? Probably not, but that's not their fault. That's the fault of the ACC. I mean, why is your – we talked about it last week. Your tiebreaker scenario put you in this position. 7-5 Duke should never have been in the championship game. Now, shout out to them for winning the game. Maybe that says more about Virginia and the fact that Virginia had kind of an elevated 7-1 conference record when they didn't have to play teams like Miami or a couple of the others that were up in the mix in the standings. But the ACC's tiebreaker scenario and the fact that Miami wasn't in the championship game is a big reason why there are two G6 schools in here. And as to the Notre Dame point, them getting left out, I think at the end of the day, again, this kind of goes back to the weekly show thing. If you had told me the debate was down to Miami and Notre Dame for the last spot, which is clearly what the scenario was, then they made the right choice. I mean, strength of record, Notre Dame 13, Miami 14. Strength of schedule, one spot difference. Game control, one spot difference. Identical record. What's the biggest thing that could separate these teams? Well, hopefully they played. Oh, wait, they did. Miami won. Miami has to be in. Now, you could argue whether Alabama should have stayed or should have dropped. I thought Alabama would drop. That's why I assumed they would drop below Notre Dame. Notre Dame would be the 9. Alabama would be the 10. But when it came down to it and that last spot was between those two teams, it was the choice was obvious. And, you know, Notre Dame can make as many claims about the ACC going back on their deal, which is insane. The ACC obviously will advocate for the ACC team over the non-ACC football team, or they can blame ESPN, or they can blame whoever. But honestly, like Notre Dame, you make an extra point against A&M, this is all moot. Or you balance out your schedule a little better, or you toughen up the back end a little more, and this is all a moot point. So that's a lot of answers to a myriad of bullet points on this question about the playoff. But specifically when it came down to those two teams, like, yeah, of course Miami's going to be in. And I think Notre Dame, while they have a couple gripes here, you know, win. Like that, at the end of the day, win. if you beat Miami, you're in.
That's, I mean, it's a fair point. And my thing was like, whoa, or just join a conference. But you're right. I mean, if you don't want to join a conference, hell, just win. I mean, you said it best. That's literally what it boils down to. Gray, we're joined by Gray Robertson of CTSN, SEC Network. Gray, let me ask you this. We got seeded in the playoffs to match up with Oklahoma, a team that, you know, beat us in the regular season. Like you mentioned earlier, hell, we did not play good football, had a -3 turnover ratio in that game. I mean, you expect to lose under those circumstances. This time around, we have about a little over a week and a half to get healthy as a football team. We know these guys a little bit better. It's our second time playing them. Hell, we just learned that, hey, it truly, in fact, difficult to beat a team twice in one season. But when you look at our seeding, how do you feel about where we're at in this whole playoff deal? Before I get your thoughts on the Oklahoma matchup itself, Alabama plays Oklahoma in the first round. If they beat them, they will then go on to face Indiana, who is the number one seed after defeating Ohio State in the Big Ten championship. And then they would go on to the semifinals where they would face the winner of, I guess, whoever wins out of Oregon and James Madison and Texas Tech and then so on. How do you feel about Alabama seeding? Do you feel like it's probably one of the better case scenarios versus a lot of people had us initially at 10 going to Texas A&M and then we would have to face Ohio State if we won that game?
Yeah, I love this if I'm Alabama. I mean, you know, because you're exactly right. We wrote it down on the show. I one thing people aren't talking about, I was kind of stunned that Georgia wasn't the 2 seed over Ohio State. So we were breaking down a scenario where it was going to be Texas A&M in College Station, Alabama's first opponent, and then you play Georgia again, and then probably Ohio State in the semis. Any path that does not include another meetup with the Georgia Bulldogs and a meetup with Ohio State, the team that I think is the, you know, eye test wise, I know Indiana just beat them, but I still think Ohio State's the best team in the country right now, is fine by me. So Alabama, yes, getting the 9 seed, a little bit of a surprise, but when the dust settled and I was watching the show, I went, oh my gosh, you get an Oklahoma team that you probably should have beaten the first time. And, we'll break it down in a moment. Then you get an Indiana squad in the Rose Bowl. Indiana's never been here before. And I know that this Alabama team is new in a lot of ways to this stage as well. But intrinsically, you know this better than anyone, it's ingrained in the program, being ready for the big stage, something like that. That's something we talk about across all sports all the time. Indiana hasn't been in anything like this in 50 years. And then in the semis, you would get either Oregon, JMU, or Texas Tech, all teams that I think have some flaws and have some things that Alabama could really scratch at and win. I think that this side of the bracket is much more favorable for an Alabama run compared to the other side.
Yeah, no, I definitely see that. You know, I do feel like Indiana will, you know, I say will because I anticipate us having success in Norman, but will definitely be a tough matchup, especially after watching how they played Ohio State. We know Mendoza is a good player and what he's been able to do offensively, but their defense really impressed me in the Big Ten championship. So I think that will be an interesting matchup to watch. But first, if we want that opportunity, we got to beat Oklahoma. And you briefly hit on it, but I'm just curious how you see this matchup going a second time around, Gray. Again, first one, it was littered with turnovers on our part. We didn't force any turnovers. We did play relatively good defense, really only gave up one touchdown. That was, you know, it came after a turnover and, you know, play where we missed some tackles on a quarterback design run. But other than that, you know, held them to field goals. Do you feel like Alabama learns from that first matchup and then is able to overcome the challenges of going on the road? Because that was in our territory. Now we got to go play in theirs. How do you see the second matchup going in Norman?
Well, I certainly hope that Alabama's learned. And I will say Oklahoma is a tough atmosphere. I mean, it's a tough place to play. It's going to be popping. OU fans do a great job making that a really, really difficult environment for opponents. But I think if you just tinker with a couple things that we discussed on the postgame show that's kind of stuck with me for the last few weeks, you'll be fine. Three things in particular. But really, you could, you know, combine two of them. I think obviously limiting the turnovers from the Alabama standpoint, but also take advantage when OU gives you a chance to turn them over. We talked about it on the postgame show. John Mateer is a talented quarterback who will make 3 or 4 throws a game that are really stupid. He will throw it into traffic. He will throw it up. He will give the defense an opportunity to pick him off. We saw LSU do that in the regular season finale, take advantage of the windows that were provided when John Mateer threw it into traffic or made a bad decision. Alabama dropped 2 pick sixes against Oklahoma. Yeah. a month ago. If you convert one of those, then we're discussing Alabama hosting a, you know, postseason game potentially on December 19th or 20th. But they didn't. And if they get that chance again, you know, in 9 days, they have to cash in on that. And then I think, you know, the other running back pass pro has got to be a little bit better. I know that that's something that we've isolated. You've talked about it a lot, especially during this stretch in kind of the tail end of October going into November and then in the SC championship game. But we saw the running backs really, really struggle in pass protection, specifically against Oklahoma. That got Ty Simpson kind of off time, out of rhythm. If they, Jam Miller, assuming he's back, Daniel Hill, the rest of the guys, hopefully Cuevas as well, assuming he's back, if everybody besides the offensive line can make sure that the window and the pocket is big enough for Ty Simpson to go through his progressions and to get his reads in and to see the defense the way that we know he's capable of, then the offense will have a much more successful time picking apart an Oklahoma secondary that gave up 326 passing yards the first time Ty Simpson played him.
Speaking of Ty Simpson, I have to ask you, because there's a lot of talk regarding Ty. How confident are you that we can see Ty return to form? I feel like we've been talking a lot about it on the LLH post-game party on the Crimson Tide Sports Network, our post-game show that we do every Saturday. We've been talking a lot about it. Hey, Ty Simpson has to find a way to return to form. We need the Ty Simpson that we saw through the middle stretch of the season to return, right? And I know there's a lot of things that also come into play, whether it's an inconsistent running game, having some injuries, whether it's on the offensive line, some of our receivers. There's been a number of things. I get that, but I'll be honest. I think a lot of these offensive struggles can help be at least overcompensated, right, by his play, which is what we saw throughout the middle of the part of the year. I genuinely think that's kind of what you have to lean into. But how confident are you, Gray, that we can see that Ty Simpson come in back to life in Norman, Oklahoma?
I'm confident, but he can't do it himself. You know, he is going to need a little bit of a push. Play calling from Ryan Grubb that kind of gives him some chances to build some confidence. You know, that to me was one of the real issues this past Saturday against Georgia. You know, Ty didn't get off to a good start at all, and it felt like he was behind the eight ball the entire time. If you can, you know, even against Auburn, he didn't get off to a great start. The second quarter was pretty good. But if you can find a way to get him some rhythm, some confidence early, especially against that defense, Ty's a smart guy. I mean, he will understand if he's having success early what that means the rest of the way, because he knows how good this Oklahoma defense is. So, yeah, I think there's confidence there 100%. It's not like he forgot how to do all the things he was doing in September and October. He's just got to believe in himself. And I think the offense can do some things to help him out as well, to make sure that some of the issues that have popped up lately don't occur again in Norman.
Yeah, we'll definitely will be hoping and praying those issues don't pop up, because if they do, against really good defense and being on the road in Norman, that could spell some trouble for this Alabama football team. As Nakai Hill Green put it, has an extra gear that they're trying to tap into, that they know they can tap into. That's what Kalen DeBoer's message is to the football team right now. Great, before we let you go, and big thanks to you for joining us, man, as you always do, and giving us all this knowledge, everything college football, Alabama, all that good stuff. Give me your prediction, right? I know we're not wizards here, but I mean, looking at the playoff bracket, and listen, I know we're Alabama fans, so we hope and anticipate Alabama be able to make a stretch. But outside of Alabama, right, let's back away from our Crimson Tide bias for a second. Who do you feel like has, what one or maybe even two teams do you feel like has the best chances of being crowned national champions if it's not Alabama?
Well, I'll cheat a little bit and say three, or at least two teams that answer your question and one team that I am intrigued by. Everything that I'm looking at, my eyes, the metrics, it tells me that the national championship might actually be on January 8th at the Fiesta Bowl if it's Ohio State versus Georgia. And I understand Indiana just beat Ohio State. I do. Like, I watched the game too. And I watched Indiana play about as well as I've ever seen a conference championship debutant play on that kind of stage. But the way Ohio State reacted after the game reminded me a little bit of how they galvanized after losing to Michigan last year and went on that mm-hmm. run. And I still think Ohio State's so good with that, the best receiving core in the country, a defense that is sick nasty. I mean, Indiana still only scored 13 points against Ohio State because of how good that Buckeyes defense is. And I think Georgia's just playing with a confidence that only a coach who's been there before can bring to a team. And Kirby Smart is doing such a good job with that program. Obviously, I mean, he's won multiple championships, but this year he is doing it with an offense that, frankly, is kind of merely okay. You know, I didn't think the Georgia offense looked anything special on Saturday against Alabama. They've had some major issues the last month that have been covered up by the fact that their defense is suddenly right back to the Georgia standard. So that game, as far as I'm concerned, will determine who wins the national championship. Indiana's a contender for sure, but Texas Tech is another team that I'm interested in because, you know, my friends in the Big 12, my friends who go to all these games, who are, you know, inside that conference and see Texas Tech much more often than I do, they keep telling me Texas Tech is for real, Texas Tech is for real, and I really want to find out. I think Oregon is an excellent test, assuming that it's Oregon in the Orange Bowl, and then the potential of Texas Tech versus Indiana or Texas Tech versus Alabama in the semifinals would give us a lot of information about what Texas Tech is capable of. And that's a team that if they play to a level where they get to the national championship, I can see it being good enough to win that national championship. So I'm not necessarily going to predict Texas Tech to do that, but I think that they've got a ceiling that many of us probably haven't seen yet. And if they show it, then why not the Red Raiders?
Wow. I'll say this, man. I'm a defensive guy. I can't help but acknowledge good defense, and they have a good defense. Rodriguez, that linebacker, man, he's something else. He's a damn good football player, and I think they really are getting a good ROI. I mean, they've invested a lot of money via NIL into their not only football. Hey, you're a softball guy. You know what they've invested into softball, too. I mean, they're one of the first, million-dollar NIL contracts for softball, I think, something like that with their pitcher. Yeah. Yeah, man. So listen, they've got some old money. People talk about Texas A&M and Texas with that old money, but obviously Texas Tech is not lacking any of that either. But that's going to be interesting, man. We'll see. Listen, if Texas Tech is able to even make the national championship game, that's definitely a damn good return. I mean, I guess they're getting a good return on best, but they've lost one game and they're in the college football playoffs. So I'm sure they're pretty happy with what they've done. Gray, big thanks to you, man, joining us here on the Miller's Edge, as you pretty much do every week now. It's definitely always fun catching up with you for a second time because we always do it every Saturday. As you guys can hear, both me and Gray breaking down Alabama football games immediately after about 45 minutes or so as the game concludes on the LLH Healthcare Crimson Tide post-game show, post-game party, as we like to call it, especially when we win. Much more of a party then. Gray, what's on tap for you next, man? I know you've got, you know, some calls and stuff like that going on with women's basketball, then I know you mentioned softball starting to get kicked off here in a little bit.
Yeah, we've got women's basketball in full swing. I'm actually out of town in Las Vegas for a softball convention with all the coaches around the country, so going to be a lot of fun to see everybody this week. And right back at it in 9 days, my friend. We will be breaking down the college football playoff and hopefully having more shows beyond that.
Absolutely, man. Would love to be able to do that with you. Greg, I appreciate you, brother. Have fun in Vegas, man. And don't be like me. Don't try to come up with theories to win money on roulette just to lose it all in about the span of 3 or 4 minutes in front of your teammates. So don't do that.
I'm just trying not to spend all my money on food.
You see, I've never been to Vegas, but I can imagine the food is definitely good out there. But I one thing I do know without being there is the gambling is probably endless. So, yeah, have fun, eat a lot of good food, and stay away from the casinos, probably.
Thanks, Christian.
Absolutely. Appreciate you, Greg. All right, guys, we got to hit the timeout. We come back. We keep on rolling. Phone lines are back open up for you guys, 205-342-9904. I think we've got Smitty up next, and we'll keep on rolling from there right here. Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC.
At Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A pleasant afternoon, mostly sunny with a high at 57. A bit colder tonight, mostly fair with a low at 32. For tomorrow, lots of sunshine, the high 49. And Friday, we turn warmer. The sky partially sunny, the high 61. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 58 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is Miller's Edge on Tide 100.9.
Welcome back into this Wednesday edition of the Miller's Edge. Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, presented by the Good Feet Store, America's art sport experts. But hey, don't forget, I know it's getting chilly outside, but if you need a place to go watch some games, man, look no further than R&R Cigars. They've got the best humidor in the Southeast, but they've also got, and again, it's a mansion, right? 2703 Gary Fitz Street. It's a mansion converted into the cigar lounge. They got TVs throughout, over 160 bourbons. They utilize the Yay Alabama beverages, so you can get those there as well. But they've got wraparound porches, and even though it's a little chilly outside, it's, you know, sunny earlier and it felt pretty decent, but they've got the heaters, so you can go, you know, fellowship, watch football, watch basketball season going on, whatever it is that you like to do, and enjoy a nice stick and a nice drink responsibly right there at R&R Cigars. Plus, they are doing the toy drive like they were doing the food drive. They now are doing the toy drive, so make sure you guys help them out with that if you can, if you have that ability. A lot of folks in need this holiday season don't have the means to really, you know, do a Christmas the way they probably would like to. So you can always help out if you do have some extra, you know, resources, toys, or money to even help support it. So they're doing that at R&R Cigars, 2703 Gary Fitz Street, where you drop off the toys during their business hours. They would gladly accept those as well. Plus, you can always go to the website and order any cigar that you like and use that code Miller's Edge for a discount. Again, I think it's around 20% or so. So make sure you guys take advantage of that at rnrcigars.com. Again, that is R&R Cigars, the official cigar provider of Alabama football since 2014. Phone lines, it is 205-342-9904. We got Smitty up next. Smitty, welcome in.
How's it going, Christian?
Hey, it's going, Smitty. How's everything, bro?
It'll be another 75-degree day here in sunny Phoenix, man. I can't keep rubbing it in, man.
Come on, Smitty. What is that about, man? Come on, man.
Hey, I'm going to barbecue for Christmas this year. Hey, I'm going to barbecue for Christmas this year is all I got to say. You know, everybody complain about Notre Dame, and they forget to ask the one question. Are we sure? Look at Marcus Freeman's hairline and ask yourself, did that man want to be in Orlando?
Come on, man.
I'm sorry I had to do that hairline. That hairline's painted, bro.
I like Marcus Freeman. He's another little biracial. He's biracial. That's my guy, man. Come on, man. He's a good coach. Yeah, don't do my guy.
But that hairline's painted, bro. If he put on a hat, that black on the inside. But here's the thing.
Hold on. Listen, mine's not. I still got mine now. I got to get it lined up, but we're good. We're good over here, man.
But the thing is, right, all this crying and – everybody said, well, Alabama ain't play that well. Well, hey, they still won the games. It ain't about how pretty it is. It's about the W's and the L's and the loss column. They love saying that, oh, they struggle at Auburn. Brother, we always struggle at Auburn.
Let me ask you this real quick. I hate to cut you off. I got to ask you this, though, because I hear what you're saying. And listen, that's why I want to be clear. It's never about, like, you know, a win is a win. We always say that. I mean, a win is a win, whether it's 1 point, 100 points, a win is a win. However, when you diagnose things and you're dissecting the games, you're watching the tape and you're seeing the things that consistently show up that you know will lead to issues down the road, which is literally what has happened here, that doesn't cause you any concern. Like, I hear what you say in your perspective of, hey, we're winning games. That's what matters. And games are going to be tough. We're playing good football teams. I agree. But then I have to draw the line when some of it is like, okay, but we are consistently, you know, shooting ourselves in the foot with this, or we are consistently one-dimensional and it's going to come back to bite us. So what about those things, Smitty? Those don't bother you at all.
Well, here's the thing. First things first, the bad teams Notre Dame has played ain't like the bad teams Alabama plays. Let's just be real about that, right?
You're comparing those two. That's different. I want to talk about comparing. I hear what you're saying on that.
Yeah, but like what you said earlier, maybe I'm just more realistic about the team than the average fan. And I've been earlier. My expectations this year was just win 10 regular season games and make the playoff. And you let the chips fall where they may, just like in the NFL. Or even baseball, just let the chips fall where they may and see what happens. Because to me, just get the dance is to win. But I never said this team was a national championship team. And because I looked at the depth, and I also thought Ty was a good player, but what I saw him be, it was just being clean pockets versus Mercer last year. I'm like, I don't know, you know. But I think what like, let's look at offensive line, right? Kalen DeBoer probably can't say the things he want to say, so I'll say it for him. He would love to put Caden Proctor at guard, but his direct backup is a true freshman. You know, and you can't have two freshman tackles. That's just a problem. And there's a lot of, and you're seeing a lot of freshmen playing, true freshmen. And there could be a lot of hiccups with that. But also, we got to look at the team as well. We got to be honest. Our receivers aren't physical enough in blocking. They're terrible blockers on the outside. Let's just be real here. And I'm just being honest. I'm not calling out anybody out that name. You can watch the game and see. And, like when it comes to coaching, I think it's part coaching, part execution. Because I go back to that first third down day to convert. People yelling at Ryan Grubb when they show the replay. The play was there. The receiver didn't block the guy. So it's part on both of those. But Christian, right. I think what fans don't get, these teams watch tape. They know what you're going to do by how you twiddle your thumbs at the line of scrimmage. They already know. You know every tail there is. And I think, because I'll just ask, I put in the chat way earlier. Maybe they should go 12 personnel. Maybe max it out a little bit like Georgia was doing in that game. Protect your quarterback. Maybe that can help you run the ball some. Because
it's funny you say that, because we got a clip up right now. They're in 12 personnel. Now, they had one tight end was on the line in the dot spot. The other one was, flexed out, and they motioned them back in. They run counter. And unfortunately, that does us no good because, again, it's the same deal where you got the guard who's pulling. He's going for trash cleanup instead of climbing up, and then you just got Wilson just sitting in the hole with a physical tackle on A.K. Deer, who I'm just going to be honest with you. A.K., man, I know he's explosive and this and that, but you can just tell when he was running the ball, yeah, he wasn't running like he was like, oh, man, I'm about to just get in here and do it. He was a little shy when he had the ball in his hands, and I'm not blaming him. I mean, it's one of your first true games really getting, you know, real carries, and you're going against some dudes like that they got in Georgia, so it is what it is. But, yeah, I hear what you're saying about 12 personnel maybe, but when you're missing your top tight end in Quavis, 81, I'm just going to be honest with you. No, damn, maybe Smitty was he was tired of me talking. I shouldn't have cut him off. No, I'm kidding. He obviously lost connection. He can circle back if he wants. But what I was getting at was 81 is not your best blocker when it comes to the C area, right? I know he tries, he gives effort, but he's a true freshman, like Smitty said. And then who is this guy? The other guy that's been playing with the Quavis. No, that's not Pritchett, but the other guy, maybe one of the transfers. I'm not sure. They're not great in terms of blocking. They just aren't. So I don't even know if 12 personnel is even the true answer. I mean, you might almost have better luck just trying to win do a Tennessee type philosophy, man. Spread people out, try to win with a light box, and just, I don't know. All I know is that if you watch the tape, pin and pull is probably our best, most successful run that we do, running on the perimeter. Right, we just don't run well between the tackles. I mean, you see it on the tape right here. We're running counter. I mean, you've got three guys just clogged up pretty much on one guy. I guess count two maybe there. Then you're leaving the backer just wide open just to make the tackle. There's nowhere to go. So I don't know. I really don't know. 205-342-9904. Let's keep Smitty's back here. So yeah, Smitty, come back on here. Sorry about that.
Hey, sorry about that.
No, you're good, man. I was talking too much. Go ahead.
Yeah, when it comes to A.K. Deer, that's why sometimes you might want to, if you can, get some guys some carries against better competition, you know, because it's kind of like throwing a kid into the water for the first time. Hey, I've never been in here. At least get me in the wading pool first, not the deep end. Maybe that, because that's what I'm talking about when you're true freshman. You're throwing a lot of them ain't ready yet. And that's supposed to be the case with a true freshman. But I think, like what you were saying about the Tennessee, maybe he's got to spread them out. And I think one thing Ty might have to do, even if it's one-on-one coverage, throw it up there. Because you might have to throw the 50-50 ball sometimes, because I was joking with my dad. One thing Milroe did, hell of high water, if it's one-on-one, he going to throw that 50-50 ball. because even if it's incomplete, you have to respect he's going to throw it. You know? And that's the thing. If he's not willing to let it rip, that's another thing, because teams peg your personality also. And correct me if I'm wrong on this. Teams know who they can blitz, and teams know who they can't blitz. I always compare to Bryce Young, for example, because he didn't have the tool or roster. There were games where Bryce Young got the tar kicked out of against a better Georgia team. He didn't look flustered. Now, every play go his way? No. Did he win some of those games? No. But I think he didn't really look flustered to me, even though he had his issues with line and stuff like that. And I think teams know if they can fluster you, they got you. Because even in a clean pocket, you may be shook. Because sometimes plays were there. And I think with Ty, maybe they just need to get him some quick, easy passes to see some completions. Maybe get Ryan some screens and let him make somebody miss. Or better yet, just keep running the ball. Even if we stink at it, call it, you know. But my last thing is, I know you got to run. When you talk about that 12 personnel, that was one Vandermark just whiffed on the guy, didn't even block the guy. And it's like, how can you blame the coordinator if the guys ain't producing? And the other thing is, if he's in there, that's showing that he's the best that we have right now. But I think this year's a successful season because you went 10-2. And let's see what happens the rest of the way. But thanks for taking my call, Christian.
Yes, sir. Always, Spenny. Appreciate you, brother. Good deal. Yeah, listen, I mean, yeah, and I agree. Look, I mean, as an Alabama fan, I think post Coach Saban, I think you have to, I'm not going to sit there and say lower expectations, but understand, I mean, when you hire anybody, I don't care who it is, it's probably going to take a couple years at least to kind of really marinate, let them get their system in here. And I would say year two under Kalen DeBoer, going 10-2, making it to the SEC championship, that's a great accomplishment, right? The game was a bad football game. We got beat down, but we also were really beat up. So, you know, that's part of it. And hey, we're in the playoffs. And one thing I do know from experience is that championships erase pretty much everything else. In 2017, we went on the road and we lost to Auburn in the final regular season game of the year in the Iron Bowl. We got afforded the opportunity to make the college football playoffs when it was a four-man system, and we ended up winning it all. And guess how many people ask me, or anybody based off of that year, about that Iron Bowl loss? Zero. All they mentioned is, hey, you won a national championship, 2nd and 26, right? Yeah, well, 2nd and 26 happened because we lost in the Iron Bowl and got the number 4 seed. So, I mean, you got to think of it like this. If this Alabama football team finds a way, now they've got a long ways to go, especially offensive, but if they find a way, nobody's going to be talking about that SEC championship against Georgia and, you know, Ty struggling last part of the year. So that would be my advice to this football team, like Nikhyle Green was saying earlier on the show, right? Get that extra gear going, and it's a 1-0 mentality. All right, we got a timeout. We come back. We keep on rolling right on the Miller's Edge. Tide 100.9, 1230, WTBC.
This is Miller's Edge on Tide 100.9.
Wednesday edition of Miller's Edge, Tide 100.9, 1230, WTBC, presented by the Good Feet Store, America's arch support experts. All right, so we got a couple calls we need to hit. We got about 7-8 minutes or so. Let's see where we're at. We just had Smitty. Let's go. We got JJ up next on the phone lines. JJ, welcome in.
Bruh, who is JJ?
Oh, KJ. Oh. So listen, KJ. Listen, I'm going off. Listen.
Hey, who hired? Who knew?
Listen. It was a typo. Our producer just made a typo. He apologizes. KJ.
Your producer like the committee members, man.
KJ. Don't dog my guys, KJ.
Y'all like the committee members, man. Y'all are committee members and producers back then. I'm just kidding, man.
Nah, come on, bro.
Dang, dude, that is crazy. I didn't know you were on there, bro. I was like, JJ. I was like, oh, let's hear from JJ. He might be new. All right, KJ, man.
But look, I know I only got like a couple minutes, though. But I just wanted to like what I'm hearing in this fan base. It's kind of weird now because now all of a sudden you see the differences with the O-line. You see that the coaches are calling things. Now I see A.J. Macaron being so nice and so polite, saying, we got to get Taj some help. Well, you wasn't saying that last year, A.J. Macaron. You was talking about what the quarterback could not do last year. But now all of a sudden, everyone sees that the quarterback has to be Superman in order to win games. Wonder what's the difference in regards to that? Wonder what the difference is. There's no way possible Georgia plays that defense like they played with Jalen Miro. It's impossible for them to do it. Because you know why? Jalen's going to run for 1,000 yards against Tennessee. There's no way. And everyone's talking about he took away carries from the running back. Look at the running backs now. They don't have a mobile quarterback that can run the ball. How are they looking now? Exactly. The guy helped the running game. The guy won game. The guy played like that guy was a dynamic player, bro. And I'm not saying that Ty got it. Like, to me, he just has to get it. The reason why Ty never started over Jalen was because he gets into these mental fogs. These mental fogs where he cannot get out of himself. Once he gets out of that, Ty can be a damn good first round quarterback. No, don't get me wrong. But he has to stay consistent with that. You cannot miss those layups to when the running back is in the flat and you're overthrowing and looking like a deer in the headlight. Like, you can't do that, man. Like, I don't know, man. This season is stressful, man. The season is stressful because this is the season that everyone told me that, hey, he has everything that he needs now. It's going to be an amazing offense. And it just hasn't been that.
Well, I'll say this. You already know who said that in terms of, you know, Ty's breakdown or analysis. So I've been saying that for years. People didn't listen to me, but I was telling you guys, I mean, that he can make throws and do all that, but that's one thing. Sometimes, you know, when he makes a mistake, it kind of snowballs. Again, we've been saying it for a couple of years. So, you know, that's a part of it. But I thought he outgrew a lot of it the way he had been playing. And unfortunately, we're seeing it kind of rear its ugly head on the tail.
You know what the turning point of the season was, Christian? The turning point of the season for Ty when it clicked.
The turning point? When was that for you?
Yeah.
Or in your opinion?
That second game after the FSU loss when they threatened to play Austin Mack and they lied and said that there was no quarterback. No, they were threatening to play Austin Mack and they set him on the bench for a series or two. Mm-hmm. That was the turning point. That was the, oh crap, this is a real turning point for him. So I don't know what we need. I'm not saying to bench him. I don't want him benched. I don't think that there's nothing Austin Mack can do. The only person that I think could do anything different was Kenyon Russell because of his leg. That's it. But maybe we may need to go back to do something to wake him up a little bit. Like, I don't know.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that point about Milroe, because, and I'm not making this up, even though people go, when you start a sentence like that, you probably are. No, I promise I'm not. I was thinking about that just like watching this tape earlier, and I was like, man, Georgia, they look so good in this game. Part of it is, you know, you talk about the lack of running game, right? So they're not respecting you there. They're teeing up. They're calling pressures. They're strapping you up on the back end. They're taking away the deep stuff. But then I immediately thought that in my – yeah, and I immediately thought, like what you were saying too, I'm like, man, that's when a guy like Jalen Milroe and his skill set comes into play. Because like you said, it forces a defense to stay true and honest, and they can't do all that. You play all that man if you want to, but that means all those guys' backs are turning. Guess who's about to scramble for 15-plus? Him. Especially, I mean, the line have been protecting decently, right? They've been doing a pretty good job. I mean, there's been a couple of breakdowns here and there, but in pass pro, the line has been decent. The running game, different story as of late. But I'll say this. I mean, you're right. It is interesting. You know, some people are definitely finally, you know, opening their eyes to the other things, and I think that's what happens when you have a quarterback with the skill set like Milroe. He's going to mask a lot of those problems. And again, when the running game's not working, yeah, that's why you lean into him. And you already know this. You listen to this show for years. We've been saying
that to them, though. You said that to them when they were talking about him taking away the carries from the running backs. I remember you literally stated, he's the best runner on the team.
But KJ, yeah, now they see it, and that's at the end of the day, and I appreciate you giving us some props. But like I said, that's not why I do it. At the end of the day, I know what my eyes see, and I know what I've learned over these years of playing football. People, that's why I always say, you got a choice. You can choose to listen to other people that are just saying stuff on a platform. You can listen to somebody who knows. And everything we say on here is 98% accurate. That said, at the end of the day, man, I don't know if, like you said, maybe Keelan Russell is a change of pace, but I don't even know if the other guys would be a huge difference right now with all the other glaring issues. I do believe, listen, AJ is right. Ty does need some help, but he also has to get out of his own way, too. I think it's a combination of both. I think the coordinator could also help, too. But we'll see, man. Hopefully them getting healthy and having some, like, I don't know, some new life. I mean, we had Nakaiho Green on the show. I mean, you know, judging by how he sounds and, you know, that the energy that he brought here on the show, they're excited. They're anticipating this matchup against Oklahoma. And hopefully the defense has had it. Hopefully that can, you know, the offense can feed off of that a little bit and get back on their feet, because we're going to need it, especially, first game. I think some people are kind of looking at this first game, Kate, and just kind of said, oh, you know, it's Oklahoma. We played bad. We should handle that. But I'm like, you got to remember.
I'm done doing that. I'm done with that logic. I've had that logic where I just assume things. I'm done. I got to go by what my eyes see. That's why football players are not. They're not saying that Alabama didn't deserve to get in because of their resume. They're saying because of what they see right now football-wise. This team cannot beat Notre Dame, and this team cannot. They haven't shown that they can beat Notre Dame, or they haven't shown that they can even beat Miami. Not saying that they haven't played weaker competition in them. They're going off of what they're seeing right now. This is what football players are doing. So you got to understand, like, you can't be mad when they say that. They just have to go show it. They've shown that they could do it during that stretch. They have to show us now again. I'm not going for it anymore in terms of assuming. I've been your offensive coordinator, and we're saying don't blame the OC. Yeah, I'm blaming the OC. He doesn't even give the ball to his best playmaker. Of course I'm going to blame him. It's his fault. Like, what are we talking about? So, yeah, man, I don't know. We got to do a lot better than that.
Spoken like a man that could potentially be good friends, maybe best friends, some might say, with one of the better NFL quarterbacks. Hey, no, I'm just saying. I'll just mess with you. KJ, I appreciate you, bro. Good to hear from you, man.
All right. Same here, man. Take care, y'all.
Yes, sir. Be easy. All right. We got to get out of here. It's been a fun one here on the show. Big thanks to everybody. Nakaiho Green, Ray Robertson, our guests here on the show today. Big thanks to all of our listeners, Tide 100.9, definitely over on YouTube and Facebook as well. Big thanks to Reed, Chase, all you guys behind the glass, making everything work. We appreciate it, and we look forward to doing it again tomorrow right here on the Miller's Edge, presented by the Good Feet Store, America's Art Support Experts, Tide 100.9, 1230, WTBC.
You've been listening to the Miller's Edge, tackling sports daily.